Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to bring you Theosophia Esoteric Studies, which is hosted by Lynn Salomon Maselli. Greetings and welcome, Lynn. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you, Hercules.
And,
I'm sorry, say that again?
I'm looking forward to your show. If you need me, I'll be here.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this, too. Tonight, I'm delighted to have the opportunity to talk to Victor Furman, who was part of a team of real-life Ghostbusters, or he would prefer the term paranormal investigators, from 2005 to 2019. Victor used to be the host and producer of a popular paranormal radio show called Second Sight. And people would call him when they thought their homes were haunted, sometimes reaching out to him through the program, which he produced. And in relation to that work with paranormal investigation, he's been featured on A&E's Unexplained program. Victor's also a healer, spiritual counselor, interfaith minister, and author. He's the co-author of the book Pet Prayers and Blessings, written to help pet owners bless their pets and cope with the loss of beloved companions. And as a healer, he's testified and shared his expertise before the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Victor's also an interviewer himself, as the host and producer of two radio shows, Destination Unlimited and Vox Novus on Om Times Radio. And he's a contributing editor for Om Times Magazine. So he's usually the one doing the interviewing, but we're turning the tables tonight. Victor's quite a Renaissance man. He was a former armed service broadcast journalist, and he says he's a storyteller by nature, and his experiences have given him some wonderful stories to tell. So, Victor, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you, Lynn. It's a pleasure joining you and being on the other side of the microphone for a change.
I thought it would be fun for you. So maybe we could start with you describing the kind of work you did with paranormal investigation teams.
Well, my primary team was an organization known as Paranormal NYC, which was founded by a wonderful gentleman, my dear friend Dom Villela. And basically, I had met him. They had a meetup many years ago, and I attended a couple of the meetups, and he asked me if I'd join the team, and ultimately he made me co-director. And our work involved responding to calls and messages to our website where people thought that they had some type of a haunting activity within their homes. And 9 out of 10 times, it was something natural rather than spiritual or supernatural. And when I say natural, I'll give you a few examples. We received a call from a gentleman who lived here in Queens, New York. And he said he was hearing noises and seeing things and getting sick constantly. And we went to his apartment. And one of my specialties, in addition to doing the spiritual aspect of the work, was to try and look for things that were in the environment that might cause these situations to occur. And immediately I looked up and I saw that there was a vent on the ceiling that had a piece of cardboard taped over it. And I said to him, what's going on with the taped cardboard on the vent? And he said, well, there are some smells that come out of that. I said, would it be okay if I were to climb up on a ladder and take that down and look inside that vent and take the cardboard off and open up the vent and look inside? He says, sure. So we did that. We had a ladder and we went up there and I took the cardboard off and I took the vent off and inside it was filled with mold. And mold can cause illness. Mold can cause hallucinations. Mold can cause a lot of the things, the manifestations that he was reporting as paranormal. And I said to him, you must get your landlord to clean this out. This is a health violation. And he did, and that was the end of his haunting. There were no more manifestations, no more illness. It actually got much better. He was grateful to our team for coming there. And that's one example. Another example was this woman who reported that her children were waking up at night and screaming and having terrible nightmares and a sense that someone was in the room with them. And we went to the home, and the children actually slept on bunk beds, one on top And we looked at the area, and I said, would you mind if we pulled it out from the wall? And behind the wall, there was an outlet. And both Dom and I had experience in electrical wiring and electricity. And we checked the outlet, and it was not properly grounded. And for those who might be familiar with this, if you have an ungrounded outlet, sometimes the voltage can actually fly free into the air. And that voltage can cause senses of being something being there, a tingling sensation sometimes, and so on. And we asked for permission, and we grounded the outlet. And from that point forward, her children slept very comfortably and very well every evening. One more example of the non-paranormal things. We had gotten a call from a woman who said that she was experiencing some type of manifestation of something, some type of a being in her apartment. And we went there and we found nothing. We used the part of the team that used the instruments, meters, that EMF meter for sensing electromagnetic fields and various devices that were used for checking things of that nature. And we sensed nothing. And I, on my spiritual psychic level, sensed nothing also. But I did sense that this woman had some type of an emotional issue. And one of the things that happened is when we had a situation where we sensed something of that nature, I would take them on the side, sit down and talk with them and say, is there anything bothering you? And if it was determined that they needed some type of professional counseling, we would recommend people who did either psychologists or counselors who were professionals in that field. So those are examples of the non-hauntings. And like I said, that accounted for 9 or 10 of the events, nine out of 10 of each of the investigations that we do. By the way, the motto of our team was we didn't go out looking for ghosts. We were not ghost busters or ghost hunters. In fact, those words are sort of, I don't like those words. What we were doing was helping people feel comfortable in their homes. And that was our goal. If we went to someone's home, by the time we left, we would make them feel comfortable, whether it's something paranormal or not. And, of course, that was our goal every time. When we went to public investigations, for example, there's a place called the Kreischer Mansion in Staten Island, New York. There's other mansions around the city. And when we went to public places, that was a different story. But when we went to someone's home, we treated them with dignity and respect. And the goal was to, as I said, make them feel comfortable in their homes and bring them the truth, not to bring them anything that didn't exist within the confines of their home. And I'm not saying that there are teams that do that, but my experience has been there are many paranormal teams who are more interested in finding the paranormal, whether it's there or not, rather than helping the people who are having this discomfort in their homes for whatever reason that might be. So in any event, that was our mission. That was our goal. That's exactly what we did. Now, we had a situation, and there were two other people on our team who were wonderfully gifted psychics, Dee Cologne and Ron Weber. And I don't necessarily call myself a psychic, but I'm very sensitive to spiritual energy and to energy. And one time we had a call to a home out in Long Island, and this woman was saying that the things were happening in the home, that there were noises at night, and the doors were opening and closing by themselves. Things were moving and so on and so forth. And the Dom and the scientific part of the team checked everything with the instruments, and they were finding that there were magnetic anomalies. And then I used my sense, and I sensed that there was the presence of a departed soul or spirit in the home. And then I asked family if what they wanted to do. And we always ask for permission, always. Permission not only of the living, but permission of those who have passed on, respectfully, and not taunting or challenging or threatening spirit in any way, and treating the spirit as if it was a physical human being standing in front of us, and we were speaking with them with respect and with dignity. That was absolutely essential in all of the investigations that we did. So in any event, I detected that this spirit was not related to the family. I didn't sense that at all. And that it may have been a lingering spirit, someone who had lived there once before, who perhaps had passed in that area, in that home, and for whatever reason did not move on to the next level or next place, whether you believe it spiritually, religiously, as into heaven or to some other realm or region where the sense of the essence of who we are, the spirit, the soul, the energy goes after the body ceases to function and passes away. And they said, if the spirit wants to leave, please, you know, we would welcome that if they choose to. And we always gave the spirit the same opportunity, the choice. Do you want to go on? And when I immediately asked that question, I immediately heard in my mind's eye, in my mind, and in my psychic sense, I heard, absolutely, yes, please help me. And then I talked the spirit over to the other side. And within half an hour, the energy in the apartment changed. The meters no longer indicated any type of electromagnetic frequency. And that was the end of the people experiencing the presence of the spirit in their home. And they were very grateful. By the way, we never charged for any of this. This was all done on a volunteer basis. This was service to others and service to spirit. And that's what our calling was like.
So when you went out on one of these missions, your client was, you conceived of your client as not only being the people in the home who were troubled by whatever they were troubled by, but also the spirit there that needed to be someplace else. Is that correct?
If there was a spirit, absolutely. If there was a spirit present, the spirit was also the client too.
Right. So you said you would talk the spirit to the other side. Has your training as a minister and an interfaith counselor, has that been relevant to doing that?
That's part of it, and part of it is something that I experienced when I was very, very young. When I was 7 years old, I was very close to my paternal grandfather, who was a bit of a mystic himself. And one day, I was in my room. I was 7 years old. And I looked up, and my grandfather was standing there. And I said, Grandpa, when did you come in? And he didn't say a word. He smiled, and then he sort of just dissolved, vanished, disappeared. And I went into the living room, and I said to my mother and father, I said, Grandpa was here. And I was one of these kids who was labeled with an overactive imagination in the 1950s because I reported things that I saw, felt, or experienced that others might not feel, sense, or experience. In any event, about 2 or 3 minutes later, the phone call came that my grandfather had passed away, and they looked at me like, how did he know? And so consequently, that gave me my first understanding of the nature of the soul, the spirit, the essence of who we are, and that my grandfather stopped by because he wanted to say goodbye to me, and I recognized that. And I recognized that in the process of doing that, he had fulfilled what he felt was unfinished business, and went to move on. And he didn't require any help. He just wanted me to see him, and then he went on. And I feel very blessed with this, to be frank about it. In retrospect, in later in life, having had other experiences, I recognize this is the first time that this type of occurrence took place and gave me a hint or a clue or a lesson as to what we're talking about. So let's get back to more recent times. So that specific home that I was mentioning where this spirit was, the essence that I had and the sort of combining things that I've learned and also have experienced is I will say to the spirit, first I'll ask for permission, I'll say, do you want to go on? And I have to hear a very resonant yes in my head, in my hearing, in my psychic hearing, in my clairaudience. And if I hear that yes, then what I do is I instruct the spirit to turn around and to look, and to see this beautiful, warm, and loving light enveloping them. And that within this beautiful, warm, and loving light, they see their family members and loved ones who have passed before them coming to greet them and welcome them to this beautiful, beautiful place. And within a few minutes, the essence of that energy is gone, and there's a sense of peace and a sense of love and a sense of completion. And that's basically the technique that I would use when I would talk the spirits on. It's very similar to what people have when they have near-death experiences. And I've been witness to and personally experienced with family members where those who were on the verge of transitioning, of passing on, would describe the presence of those who had gone before them, coming for them and welcoming them, lovingly bringing them home, wherever that home might be. So that's basically the technique that I used, and I find it to be very comforting to many people.
Do you have any thoughts about why these particular spirits didn't find their way to the light, to that warm and loving light sooner?
A few different things. Number one, there's this concept of unfinished business, like my grandfather coming to visit me specifically because he wanted to say goodbye to me. And once that was accomplished, his business was finished. He didn't feel any obligation to do anything else. A lot of people pass and leave a lot of unfinished business. As an interfaith minister, I've had the blessing of officiating funerals for many friends and family members. And one of the things that I share at every funeral, at the end of the memorial or the end of the funeral service, is that tomorrow is never guaranteed. If you love someone, tell them you love them today. If you feel that you've hurt someone, either intentionally or unintentionally, whatever the cause was, ask for forgiveness today. If you feel that someone has hurt you, forgive them today. Tomorrow is never guaranteed. And in the process of this, expressing love and forgiveness and communicating anything that has to be resolved anything that's left unfinished, you're healing not only that relationship, but you're healing yourself. So consequently, when you pass, you don't have any unfinished business to resolve. And a lot of the times, the concept of unfinished business is what causes the soul, the spirit, the essence of who we are to linger because of incompletion. I forgot to tell my wife where my financial documents are, or I forgot to tell someone I love them, or I forgot to apologize to someone, or I'm worried about my loved one who's left behind and may not know what to do, that type of thing. And again, I haven't done too many of those, but a couple of times I've had the person who felt the person who was the unfinished business, the family member or the relative present, and I would ask the spirit, what do you want to share? What do you want to say? And like I said, I'm not a real psychic in the sense that I hang out a shingle that says psychic or medium, but we have had other members on the team who would make those connections and then help that person to convey whatever message they wanted to convey to their loved one so that they can be free to pass on.
That's really beautiful. Have you ever in your investigations, have you ever encountered a malevolent spirit or a demon?
Okay, this is an interesting question because there are a lot of people out there, paranormal organizations and people who refer to themselves as exorcists and demonologists. And in my personal experience, I will not comment on anyone else. I can only speak from my experience. I have never encountered anything that I would consider to be a demon or a negative entity. I'm not saying they don't exist. I have never encountered one. I have encountered many people who we went to their homes for calls about hauntings and so on, and that the people themselves had a lot of anger and a lot of negativity. And I wonder sometimes if what's presented as demonic or negative entities is not the energy that the living person is projecting. And again, if we ever encountered anything like that, someone who was really processing a lot of anger, a lot of pain, a lot of confusion, I would have a conversation with them. And if I deemed it to their higher interest, we would recommend that they obtain counseling.
That's kind of like what they say about poltergeists. Usually there are children in the home or adolescents who have a lot of unresolved energy. Have you encountered that?
No, not encountered that, but it's interesting that you talk about that because that's something that I would love to have seen at one time or experienced where the energy of an adolescent was so powerful that it actually caused things to move. And the word poltergeist actually translates as noisy ghost or I forget the other, but noisy ghost basically. And a lot of that's been attributed to, like you said, children who have a lot of energy, pent-up energy, and they sort of discharge it into the immediate environment that they're living in and cause things to fall or to move or that type of thing. I've never had that experience myself. I would love to have seen that or experienced that myself. But I'm talking about people who are so angry that their anger is actually palpable. You can feel their anger. You can sense their anger, even if they're not physically or visually expressing it. But you just have that sense about them, or someone who's really, really in a lot of pain, emotional pain. And I am an empath, and as part of my makeup, and I sense that right away with folks. There was a woman, like I had said, who called us to her apartment, and we found nothing there. And she said thank you, and we left. And then she called again, and we came. And it turned out what she wanted was company. She wanted someone to just be there for her so that she felt she had company. She went out of her way to get food and cake and coffee and tea and what have you, just to have company. And she just felt very lonely. So that was part of her makeup, and again, referred to counseling.
That's really not that surprising, because there are an awful lot of lonely people in the world.
Absolutely.
What was the strangest investigation you've ever participated in?
This was really interesting. We got a call from a woman up in Newburgh, New York, who had just purchased a home up there. And she had moved from the city. And she was getting noises and lights going on and off and all types of manifestations. She was on the first floor. There's a three-floor home. And she was on the first floor, and these were happening on the second and third floor. And we knew nothing about the previous owners. We knew nothing about the history of the house. She had no knowledge as to the history of the house, other than the person she had purchased from. They had not reported any of this activity. And she had reported to us that the activity started when she started making renovations. Nothing happened until she started making renovations. And she was making the renovations on the second and third floor. She hadn't done anything on the first floor yet. And that's where all this stuff was happening. So we went into the investigation, and this is really, really interesting. We went up there, and I immediately felt something up there. I felt a very negative energy, and I couldn't pinpoint it, but I sensed it. And I started going from room to room, and I finally got to this one room, a very large room in the back of the house. And I sensed that there were three beings there, three spirits, three entities. One was an elderly man, one was a young boy, and the other was an older woman. And the boy and the man were reacting to this woman in a way that she was just negative and angry and mean to them, or something of that nature. That's what I was sensing. And I had no other understanding or information. And I tried to do the clearing, and I couldn't do the clearing that night. For whatever reason, these beings did not want to leave that room or that house. And so we asked her to start investigating and seeing if she could find out the history of the home and so on and so forth. That was our first visit. And we wanted to help her, but again, without some kind of a background, because these entities, these souls, these spirits were not giving me any information other than these poor people, this poor older gentleman, this young boy being afraid of this woman for some reason. So she did some investigation and research, and it turned out that home 100 years ago had been owned by a doctor, and that third floor was where he had inpatients. People would actually be in a hospital setting within that home. And I put two and two together and sort of sensed that the elderly man and the young boy were patients, and that this woman was a nurse, and they were frightened of her. She was a mean Nurse Ratched, if you call the character Nurse Ratched. And,
yes.
and so basically we did a clearing there, and I did a clearing there, and I basically asked the spirits to move on, and if they were willing to. And they both, once the boy and the elderly man were moved on in spirit, Nurse Ratched left of her own accord. And what was really fascinating about it is a television production company had found out about it unbeknownst to us. And then they the woman didn't want to do anything in her home. But Dom and I were asked to take part in filming a TV show in New Jersey at another house, sort of replicating what we experienced in that house. And that was interesting, too. I don't think it ever aired because we never got notification that it was going to be on. But something else about television. We were called, there was a show, used to be a show called Pregnant in Heels, and I think it was on A&E. And there was this model who was dealing with couples who were just getting married or having a baby or what happened. And they were having issues in their home or whatever it might be. And this one episode was about a haunted nursery. This couple was expecting. And there was a nursery in the home. And they would hear noises coming from the nursery, and they would have other types of manifestations, lights going on and off, and this type of thing. And they wanted us to investigate the nursery and clear it for this couple as part of the show. And we went there, and we found absolutely nothing. There was nothing physical. There was nothing emotional. There was nothing spiritual. Nothing. Nothing at all. And we basically said, I said, as a minister, I'll bless the room for you, but I cannot find anything of a paranormal nature here. So they thanked us and so on. We found out that they brought in another investigator who found everything, because if they had televised that we went in there and found nothing, nobody would watch the show. They found someone who would find something, if you know what I mean. And
yes.
That part, that segment was aired with that person, but not with us.
That's too bad.
That's really funny, too.
It is,
you know,
funny.
I understand media. I understand ratings. I understand if there's a haunted house that it really isn't haunted, who's going to watch?
Right. Right, but it would have been nice if they would have found a really haunted house, you know, to televise.
This is true, yeah.
So you retired from paranormal investigation in 2019. Do
yes.
you miss doing that work, and would there be circumstances where you would resume doing it?
I don't really miss it per se, because I have so many other things happening in my life that I'm really engaged in so many other purposes. But if there's a situation where a child, actually, we did come out one time. It was a child who was involved in Brooklyn, a child who was afraid, some type of would wake up and there'd be some type of disturbance in the room. This was a boy, I think he was either 9 or 10 years old, and we went to the home and we did the investigation, and I found out that the spirit, the essence that was there, was actually the boy's aunt and wasn't really disturbing him, but was worried about him and was there to comfort him. And he, when he heard that, it changed his entire affect. He came to the understanding that the sense that he had, that someone was like coddling him or touching him or holding him in a loving way, was his aunt who had passed away, and not some type of malevolent entity. And once he learned that, he was very comfortable with the situation, and he didn't want her to leave. And obviously the aunt, when she transitioned, felt the unfinished business of caring for this nephew. So she stuck around, and that was bad. But again, if we got a call that a child was, I would consider going out again, even though the team really hasn't been active in a couple of years. If we had that type of call, I would respond to that call.
That brings up a question I have in my mind. We talk about these spirits as not as being lingering, not having gone to the light. We've all seen the movie Ghost, and you know where in the end he goes to the light, Patrick Swayze character.
Mm-hmm.
But do spirits who have actually gone to the light also sometimes come back to visit?
I have not experienced that. I have not experienced that in my work. My sense is once they go on, they go on. I'm going to share a couple of stories with you. I was in a wonderful, loving relationship with a woman. It was a life-changing relationship for both of us, and she had cancer. And when she passed, Let me backtrack for a couple of seconds. We had attended, both attended the New Seminary of New York. You know what? Let me backtrack a little more. This is how I got into interfaith ministry. In the 1990s, I got involved in the healing practice of Reiki. And in those days, if you wanted to go into a hospital to do any type of hands-on healing work, you either had to be a licensed massage therapist or ordained in a faith where that was part of the practice of one of the sacraments. And consequently, I had a full-time job in industry. I could not take 3 years and go to massage school. But because of this wonderful woman that I had met, I found out about an organization called the New Seminary of New York. And that organization was one of the first interfaith seminaries in the world. And I enrolled, and she was asked to enroll with me. The founder of the organization said, you must enroll together. And we did, and then we were ordained and graduated in November of 1997. Her cancer had been in remission and returned, and 1997, she had a year of struggling. She was getting treatments, but she was struggling. And November of right 2 weeks after the ordination graduation, one evening she had a seizure, went to the hospital, brought her to the hospital, and the doctor basically said that she's not going to recover from this. And we elected to go on home hospice. I brought her home. She was in a coma. Had day people, healthcare workers during the day. And then I would come home every evening, and I'd stay by her side all night. And January of 1998, she passed away. January 8th of 1998, she passed. And we had the funeral, and I came home from the funeral, and I was feeling, obviously, grieving desperately, because I really had, like I said, this was a life-changing relationship for me. And we had two cats. And I decided to take a nap, and I laid down on the bed, and the two cats jumped up on the bed, and they sat in front of me like two little sphinxes. And I was looking at them, they were looking at me, and they were sort of sharing the grief with me. And all of a sudden, they looked up toward the ceiling, and then their gaze started coming down directly behind me and on my back. And I felt the presence of two hands on my back rubbing me, and I knew it was her. I knew she was telling me that she was okay, that she loved me, and she was moving on. And within a few minutes, the sensation stopped. That was a personal experience that I'll never forget. The kind of loving message that I wish every person who lost a loved one could experience.
That
being said, thank you, thank you, yeah. And it's interesting, as Lynn knows, one of the things that happened because of that time in the seminary was when during the graduation and ordination ceremony, I was the president of the class, and my beloved Judy at the time was on the stage with me. She was also graduating. And the majority of the speech that I gave to my classmates and to the people gathered at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in Manhattan, this huge, beautiful cathedral, was that Judy had been a special education teacher. In Harlem, she had changed the lives of so many kids who called her mom and just brought love and encouragement to so many kids. And there were actually 250 students of hers at the funeral, former students of hers at the funeral, in addition to her faculty and friends and family. And I was honoring her. And Lori Sue Brockway, who had joined the seminary at that time, that was just before she started her classes, heard me honoring this woman, Judy. And she said, where do you find a man who honors a woman the way this man is honoring this woman? And it planted a seed. And then, like I said, Judy had passed in January. And I'd stayed on at the school in addition to my daytime work. And I was doing some work at the school. I was recording the classes, and I was helping with the lectures and so on and so forth. And that Lori Sue introduced herself to me ultimately, and then ultimately a relationship ensued, and she and I have now been together and married for many, many years. We're very blessed in that relationship. So the fact that Judy had come to me and really just gave me that message, helped me through the grieving process, and helped me to renew my purpose and move forward. And I wish that everybody had an experience like that, that everybody was blessed with a loved one who's passed on, wishing them goodbye. That was twice in my life, first with my grandfather and then with her.
And that was the last communication from her? You feel that at that point she moved on?
Absolutely. You could feel there was a palpable change in the energy in the room once she had passed, once she had gone on. It was something that it was like a lightness. I can't explain it. I'm trying to give you something that something comparable to that. But it's like the feeling that you get when you've finished a major project, or when something has been a challenge and the challenge is now done. It's like a relief, like a lightness, like a fresh breeze, like a new opportunity, like something has changed that is positive in a very beautiful and loving way. And that's what I felt. And that's my sense about it. I have never encountered in any of our investigations, if I have encountered the essence, the spirit, the soul, I have not encountered anything that a person has gone on and then has come back. That's never been encountered by me personally or my team or the teams I've been affiliated with.
Since we're talking about your life, you mentioned to me at one point that your life had been filled with synchronicities.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. First of all, a lot of people hear the word synchronicity, and synchronicity was a word that was coined by Carl Jung, one of the famous fathers of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis. And he said that a synchronicity is a meaningful coincidence without causal connection. So when people use the word coincidence, you know, it coincides. Two things happen at the same time or happen in conjunction with one another. But he said that these are without causal connection, that there's no seemingly causal connection. So one of those synchronicities was, again, because this is a longer story. So when I was involved in the Reiki, and I would have I was holding these Friday night meditation and healing group classes. And at one of these classes, this friend of mine came to me and said, I know this woman named Judy, and she's dealing with cancer, and she'd like to learn more about the meditation and Reiki and the healing work that you do. And I made an appointment to see her. And I met her on a Sunday morning, and she opened the door, and we looked at each other and literally said, it's you. We'd known each other before. We traveled, not in this lifetime, but we traveled together before. And that was the beginning of that relationship. And that relationship, she was the one who introduced me to the new seminary and brought me into that interfaith community. And after her passing, that's how I met Lori Sue. Again, another synchronicity, and just so many things. And another aspect of this is that one of the reasons, the main reason I had gone to the seminary, at least in my mind, was to be able to go into a hospital and do laying on of hands. But it turned into so much more. After 9/11, Lori Sue and I were both volunteer chaplains for the Red Cross at the Family Assistance Center here in Manhattan. Counseling the families of those who were waiting word of their loved ones who were missing in the horrible tragedy of 9/11, and of being of service. So we had our day jobs. Lori Sue was a journalist and a writer and an editor. And my day job, I was involved in business and technology for 44 years actually. And so we had our day jobs, but we also had this opportunity to be of service to others. Lori Sue married many, many couples, so many couples, hundreds and hundreds of couples, and did so many beautiful weddings. And in my case, my calling actually was the opposite. My calling is I did some weddings, but I also did funerals, and I did a lot of spiritual coaching and being of service to others. So again, the synchronicity that led from point A to point B to point C. Here's another synchronicity. So 2020, with the advent of COVID, the company that I had been working for in the welding technology industry said, the majority of your work is to meet people face-to-face, and this new thing, COVID, you're 67, I was 67 at the time, and they said, we don't want to take a chance on anything happening to you. Why don't you take an early retirement? And I didn't want to retire, but they were very generous and very, very kind about it, and so I did. The very same day, I got a call from the current administration of the new seminary saying, we're having an intensive this weekend. Would you care to join and comment? And I said, absolutely. And then they said, you know, you got your master's in spiritual counseling, the first iteration of the seminary. You never got your doctor of ministry. Would you like to go for your doctor of ministry? I said, absolutely. Then they said, you know, we're going to start services on Skype, on Zoom, with the Interfaith Temple. Would you like to become the minister of communication? I said, absolutely. So, you know, one door closes, another door opens. I've had that happen my entire life. Every time something has stopped or come to an end, something new has replaced it. Synchronistically, it's been just so many ways I can't begin to explain to you.
That's amazing, but I guess it's spirit working in your life. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the other thing is the recognition. You know, I feel so blessed that there's been a continuous purpose in my life. One of the beautiful teachings that the founder of the new seminary used to say is there should be a 13th commandment, thou shalt have purpose. And that purpose doesn't have to be the same purpose all the time. It could be multiple purposes. But a lot of people look at life and they do their day jobs and they have their families and so on and so forth, and then they retire and they say, what have I got? You know, what's my purpose? I've had continuous purpose my entire life, and I feel so blessed by that purpose. And just another thing, to share another story with you. So in 1975, I was in the Air Force, and I was stationed in Korea. I was with Armed Forces Radio and Television. And I was stationed in Korea, and I was having a problem with my back. I'd gotten tackled by we had an intramural game, Army and Air Force intramural football game, and the guy tackled me headfirst in my lower back, and I was in a lot of pain. And a friend of mine said, why don't you try acupuncture? Now, I heard of acupuncture, but it wasn't very popular, you know, back in the States in the 70s. Not a lot of people were aware of it. And I said, okay, I'll try that. And I found an acupuncturist. And I had the acupuncture. And within a few minutes, my back started feeling much better. And within a few hours, the pain was gone. And I said, that's wonderful. And then what I did not know was in those days that acupuncture in Korea, at least, that they did not use disposable needles, that their sterilization techniques were not the best, and that hepatitis B was endemic in Korea, meaning many people carried it, but few people manifested the disease itself, got sick from it. They carried it, but didn't get sick. 2 weeks later, I woke up in the morning, one morning, and I looked in the mirror, and I was feeling kind of weird. My eyes were yellow. I said, uh-oh, something's not right here. And I went to the Army Hospital, and it's the descendant hospital of the 4077th MASH that people used to see on the MASH TV and movie. And but it's a full-fledged hospital, and they looked at me and said, you have hepatitis, and they admitted me immediately. And they were treating me differently than they were treating the other patients in the room in the ward. And I was wondering what was going on. I had completely lost my appetite. I lost a lot of weight. They were giving me supplements and vitamin K and things that none of the other patients were receiving. And then one day the doctor came in after I was in the hospital for about a week and said, do you have a will? And I said, no. He says, well, we think you need a will because we want to make sure your family is protected if you pass. And they had the Red Cross send a telegram to my mother back here in New York with the words, your son is very seriously ill. His prognosis is not good. We will keep in touch with you, which obviously thrilled my mother. And then one day, the voice came. And this is something that I've experienced from childhood on. I'll hear a voice inside my head. And what I found is if I listen to the voice, I can't go wrong. And the voice said, ask the doctor for a picture of a healthy liver. And I did. And he said, why? And I said, I don't know. I just want to look at a picture of a healthy liver. He brought me an anatomy book with a picture of a healthy liver. I started studying the book, studying the picture. And within a few minutes, the voice said, put the book down and place your hands over your abdomen. And I did. And I started feeling this wonderful warmth and tingling sensation. Mind you, I had no experience whatsoever with energy healing before that time. This is brand new to me. And I had this wonderful feeling. And I don't know, I lasted for about a half an hour. And at some point, I fell asleep. 5 a.m. the next morning, the nurse woke me up, apologized for waking me, took some blood. 2 hours later, she came back. She said, the laboratory messed up your samples. We have to take some more blood. I'm really sorry. She took another blood sample. An hour or so later, the doctor came in. Said, what did you do last night after I gave you that book? I told him. He says, you're crazy. You're crazy. I said, what do you mean I'm crazy? He said, last night your liver enzymes were at a level that we didn't think you would survive the night. This morning, they're almost normal. We've never seen that happen before. Now, you would have think that would have been my eureka moment, my aha moment, and said, yes, this is my path. But I wasn't ready. I was 23 at the time, or 20, what was it, 75, so I would have been 22 at the time. And I wasn't ready to embrace any kind of new path at that point. And, you know, just that way things go. But again, this is an example of the wonderful synchronicities and the wonderful blessings I've had in my life. The following year, I'm still in Korea, 1976. And one morning, the voice says, you have to call your mom. She needs to speak with you. She needs to hear your voice. So I said, okay. I always listened and didn't, you know, always responded. So I called my mom. And in those days, for those people who know what extension telephones are, and the younger folks won't know what we're talking about, but you used to have a regular phone. You could have extensions to that phone in other rooms. They're all wired phones. You could answer one or answer the other phone. And so my mother and sister picked up the phone simultaneously. This is 6,000 miles away from Korea, back in New York. And I said, Mom, is anything wrong? And my sister goes, oh, my God, how did he find out? And it turned out that my mother had been scheduled for major surgery the next day. And immediately I said, Mom, I said, and the voice told me to tell her, Mom, the surgery is going to be a complete success. You're going to be fine. You have nothing to worry about. She needed to hear those words from me. And, of course, the operation was a complete success. She healed completely, and she was fine. So, and then, again, another synchronicity, another blessing, another one of these wonderful messages that came that I was able to share that information and in the process of doing so to help someone or be of service to someone. And that's what it's all been about for me, the paranormal investigation, the healing work, counseling, the spiritual coaching, and the interfaith work. I have, about 12 years ago, 15 years ago, a friend of mine who was very familiar with the fact that I was both involved in industrial technology as my day job, but I also had the spiritual aspect of my life, asked me, how do you balance the fact that you have a day job in industrial technology, welding technology, and so on, and this other stuff that you do? And very naturally, I said, the day job pays my salary. The other work pays my solary. This word solary came out of me. And my first solo book, I've co-written with Laurie Sue, and I've also written for others, written with others. My first solo book is entitled Solary, The Compensation of Spirit, and I hope to have it ready by next year. And I'm going to share a lot of these stories in that book and a lot of my experiences. So again, these blessings just keep coming and coming and coming, and I feel very grateful for them.
That's a beautiful story, and I'm really interested in that book, Solary.
Thank you.
Getting back to the paranormal work, what advice would you offer to people considering joining a team or starting a paranormal investigation team?
Okay, the first thing I'll say, it's not ghost hunting and not ghost busting. That's something that television and movies and so on and so forth. If you're going to public places, that's one thing, to do investigations to find if there's anything there. That's one thing. If you're going to these old haunted mansions or these spooky places, that's fine. That's wonderful. If you're going to go to people's homes, take their comfort and respect them as part of your motto, it's part of your constitution, your ethic. You're not going there to find a ghost. You're going there to find truth, whatever that truth may be, whether it's something supernatural or not. It's important that you treat the people that you're welcoming, that are welcoming you into their homes with respect, with dignity. Speak to them on a level of someone who is counseling them. What's going on here? Describe the experiences that you're having. Pardon me. Tell me what you think this is, or you have a relative who's recently passed, or did someone pass in this house that you're aware of? Ask a lot of questions, and have some people on your team who can do the stuff that Don Bellella and myself did, including checking electrical wiring and looking for anything, plumbing. We had a situation once where there was noise in the house. It turned out to be a pipe that had air pockets in it. We were able to drain the pipe and the air pockets and the noise went away. Bring skill sets that are practical and environmental. Bring skill sets that are listening, emotionally listening, and, you know, rather than talking at people, listen to people. Listen, there's an old expression, listen twice, speak once. Hear what they're actually saying. Understand where it's coming from. Use your intuitive sense, if you have it, to take that information that they're sharing with you, and then bring it to the investigation. And don't necessarily sense that it's always a ghost, because like I said, 9 out of 10 times in our experience, it was nothing supernatural or paranormal. It was environmental, it was emotional, it was something of that nature, something natural. And then if you do find a spirit, treat the spirit the way you would treat a living human being in the flesh standing in front of you. One of the things they used to do on these paranormal shows on television is they would taunt the spirit to show them something, to act or to move or to manifest in some way. You wouldn't do that if that was a live person in the body. You wouldn't taunt them or threaten them or try to force them to do something that they chose not to do. Don't speak to a spirit in any negative way, in any way that's not compassionate and loving and concerned. Always speak to the spirit as if you were speaking to an actual physical body standing in front of you, a living, breathing person standing in front of you with dignity and respect. The dignity and respect and compassion has to be the rule for both the living and for those in transition. If you find nothing, be honest about it. We found nothing. We'll offer to come back if they experience something again, because 9 out of 10 times after you say, we really found nothing, that's the end of it. Because people sometimes, because of popular media, will think something exists even if it doesn't exist, and call out for someone to come and help them. But when you leave them with comfort, leave them with respect, leave them with dignity. If there are kids involved, never say anything to a child that would frighten the child. Speak to the child the way you would speak to your own child. Tell me what happened. What do you think it is? What would you like to say to the spirit or to the ghost if there is one? That type of thing. Just engage the child in a way that's don't talk down to the child, but talk to the child on a level of compassion, on a level of, this is my child. If this were my child, how would I address the situation with my own child? And again, it comes down to dignity and compassion and respect. Funny, one of the things that I shared recently on my Facebook page was that with all of the things going on in the world today, one of the blessings of my training at the new seminary was that in virtually every faith, in virtually every religion, there is an iteration of the golden rule. Do unto others as you've had them do unto you. Love thy neighbor as thyself. If every human being embraced that within their own faith and embraced those two basic tenets, what a world we would have. And I say use those same tenets when you are called into a situation where there's supposedly a haunting or a spirit of or some type of a manifestation taking place. Talk to those people the way you would want to be spoken to. Help them. Be compassionate, be loving, be kind. And that would be my advice.
One thing I noticed in some of the information you gave me, you were able to hear the communication from spirits intuitively inside your mind, as you said.
Right.
But you also said that sometimes there was what they call ITC, instrumental transcommunication. In other words, that spirits sometimes communicated through electronic means.
Yeah, electronic, yeah. So what would happen was you'd have a tape recorder going, and you'd ask a question. And rarely, this did not happen frequently, but once, maybe, let's see, from 2014 years, probably maybe three or four times, we caught what's known as the EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, which is you ask a question, you have a tape recorder, shows how old I am. You have a recorder, an electronic recorder or some type of recording device going, and you ask a question, and you hear an answer. And that's what's called electronic voice phenomenon. And I think maybe four times in all those years did we actually get something like that. And it was basically a yes or no answer. Is there someone here? Yes.
I'm sorry to intrude, Lynn, but we have around 3 more minutes left, so you might want to share contact information.
Okay, we're going to wrap up now. All right, so Victor, how would people reach you if they wanted to?
I have 2 podcasts that I have on Olden Times Radio. One is called Destination Unlimited, and the other is called Vox Novus. And those are available on oldtimes.com/IOM/shows/ the first one is Destination-Unlimited, and the next one is Vox-Novus. I have a website which is in sad need of updating. I haven't had a lot of time to update it, but it's victorthevoice.com, victorthevoice.com, and emails can go to victor@victorthevoice.com.
Wonderful. And if people want to reach me, they can reach me through the webmail of the Edgar Cayce Center in New York, and that would be info@edgarcayceNYC.org, and I'll spell that because some people have trouble with Casey. It's info, I-N-F-O, the little at symbol, edgarcayce.org, info@edgarcayceNYC.org.
Lynn, I think we have a minute. I just want to share, when my mom passed in January of 2020, I started seeing this vision of circles and rings, and I've been channeling poetry since I was a kid, and this poem came through me, and I'll just like to share it with you. It's called Circles and Rings, and it says, "The path of great beauty in so many things, from atoms to galaxies, circles and rings. Natural wisdom that dwells there within, from naught to 360, that magical spin. We circle each other in gravity's dance, as Gaia circles soul with solar romance, as Luna circles us in life-giving motion, drawing the tides and inner emotion. And the age of the oak is found in its rings, as in woman and man and all living things. And when the rings stop and life comes to an end, we'll all circle back and dance once again."
I like that. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Victor, for sharing your experiences. This has been really interesting. And as Hercules said, perhaps we might do a part 2 at some point and talk a little bit more about your work now, as well as the things you've done in the past. But I really appreciate your being here tonight and sharing with us.
Lynn, I'm grateful to you for asking.
Well, thank you, and this has been fun, and I want to thank all of the people who listen for their interest, and thank you, Hercules, for this opportunity for us to share this tonight.
Thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you, Victor, for a wonderful show, and thank you to our wonderful audience for tonight. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Lynn, and thanks again, Victor.
Thank you.
Thank you, and bye-bye.